Adam Cravens, and Jane Ellen watch more movies each month than most people do in a year. Parental guidance suggested reviews new movies in theaters with no spoilers promise. These film nerds know their stuff.
Hello and welcome to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And since the theaters are closed...
It's an interesting pronunciation.
Yeah, I just figured I'd switch things up a
bit. Thank you. I'd be misreading that phonetic spelling of that word.
Closed. We're going to be talking about, well, as we have been, movies that if you haven't seen, you should, or movies that are so good we could talk about it for days.
Classics. Significant films. Eventually,
yes.
We're going to get to films that we just detest. But what
yeah.
they're films
Mars
that
Attacks.
Can
yeah.
they can warrant discussion at
yes.
at a bare minimum.
And disclaimer: this film that we're about to do warrants discussion even by non super geeky Trek fans. It's that good.
And for those of you out there, not every Trek fan is a super geek.
No, like, some are just mildly
Some are just
Trek
casual.
Fans. Yeah. 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 So we're going to talk about the 1982 film Star Trek II, Wrath of...
Khan! Oh, my. Like, it... I can think of very few instances where a sequel outpaces its predecessor so far.
Oh, yeah. So, original series had done its 3 years. It was off, and then the fans are all into it. And
you had a brief revival mm-hmm. with the animated series, but for the most part, like, Star Trek, more or less, people thought Star Trek was kind of done.
It was over. And then they did a movie, and I wasn't a little kid when the movie came out, but I remember being savvy enough about movies to know that it sucked. But I liked the parts of the original cast. I liked their interplay. And if I could just see all that smooshed together, like 15 minutes of stuff.
And you cut out the
yeah.
17 hours of the exterior shots of the Enterprise.
Which, by the way, is hilarious.
Oh,
now.
My goodness. There's just so... There's a reason why that movie is jokingly referred to as the motionless picture.
Yeah. Yeah. So I loved seeing the characters again. The movie was ridiculous. It was about V'ger, which is actually Voyager. It's just the whole...
Just
it
ponderous.
Was awful.
Like, it, there's very little that I like about that film. Besides the fact...
In retrospect, Persis Cambada, the bald chick, is now deceased, and Stephen Collins, apparently a pedophile.
Oh, wow, yeah, that...
Didn't see that.
Man, did I not see that one coming. Mm-mm. Couldn't have called that.
No.
Like, just...
So there are downsides to it.
Truth.
And yet... We're fortunate that they said, okay, let's give it another shot.
Well, the catch about it was, like, it the Star Trek, the motion picture, especially if you adjust for inflation, is one of the most expensive movies ever made. Like, when it was made in 78,
it
was
78
or 79, it was one of the most expensive movies Paramount had ever produced. It was around, like, $40 million, which doesn't sound like a lot now, but... If you keep in mind that in 1977, the original Star Wars...
79 was when it came out.
The original Star Wars was shot for around, I believe, $11 million.
It's 2 hours and 25 minutes long.
Oh, and
at least 2 hours of it are exterior shots of the Enterprise.
It's about 2 hours too long. Like,
mm-hmm.
it shouldn't even be the length of a regular episode. But it still...
Oh, it was made for $35 million, and here's why. It was made for $35 million. It made... $139 million.
Like I said, that's a lot of money. And I think they recognized that there was value in the brand, but they were like, we shouldn't spend $35 million on it again. What if we shoot it for like $10 million
mm-hmm.
or $8 million and it still makes 140, or maybe it doesn't make $140 million, but we didn't spend $35 million on it.
Exactly. So 3 years later, we get Wrath of Khan. And what they did was they wanted to keep the original series people. Again, we didn't call it original series because there were no other Star Trek series.
Well,
the cartoon.
Well, I mean, you had the cartoon. And at one point, the motion picture was going to be a sequel series. But this point, like, TNG doesn't exist.
It was
DS9,
just called Star
Voyager.
Trek.
Yeah.
Just Star Trek. And so the Star Trek fans, like, someone got the bright idea, and this was a really excellent idea. Let's take one of the stories from the original series, and let's move on with that. And so the story
What happens next?
Yeah, the story is brilliant. First of all, it had Ricardo Montalban, who is...
Really, honest to goodness, that had to be the thing. Like, because there's a lot of really good episodes of the original Star Trek that easily could have had, like, sequels, especially, like, with a film's budget.
Yeah.
But I want to say, like, really, if I'm looking through all that and you just see a character that you're like, who do we need to, like, put up on, like, whose charisma and personality is so large it fills up the entirety of that screen. And mind you, in this film, Kirk and Khan never actually share, like, a scene together. Like, they're looking at each other through view screens, but, like, there's no actual physical confrontation between the two of them. Like, it's really just Shatner reacting, which I don't know a better way to put that, but if you've ever seen it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And just Khan is just like, I mean, he's Spinal Tap. He is just putting it on to 12.
And by the way, he was 60 making Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, I'm not going to look like that when I'm 60. I'm not going to look like that when I'm 40. Like,
everything about him is gold. And
Nicholas, like, the dialogue that he is given to chew on, just the, at hell's heart, I stab
and
at
And it
thee.
Just so happens, he's in the middle of Fantasy Island, which is still running, so that is very popular. Unfortunately, it didn't stay as cool as the first year, but I digress. But it had, like, 4 or 5 years of popularity. First it was The Love Boat, and then it was Fantasy Island. Friday nights at my house. Because I didn't go out ever.
maybe to see the Wrath of Khan?
Maybe do that. So that was important. So he's box office because people are interested in that TV show is making a lot of money anyway. So they put him in there. And the story of Space Seed is actually quite fascinating. You have these genetically altered people, which... They do stuff like that. They have the technology.
Except...
They're not really doing it.
The one snafu that comes into it, especially around the year that I get to view this film, they take over the planet, and I believe cause World War III in the year 1992.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that part.
It's real... That must have just went under the radar.
Yeah.
for me, because I don't remember that. And we certainly don't talk about it. But
that didn't happen.
It's a couple of years removed. And like, I like how Star Trek still refers to Khan. Like, I guess all of that still happened. And I mean, mind you, Space Seed is shot in the 60s. So like, that's the far off future. But... By the time, you know, you're watching this on DVD and VHS or like whatever, and they're just like, yes. Whenever the augments took over in 1992, and I'm like, wait, what? Hold on, let me bring up my microfiche.
But what? I'm going to go to the card catalog.
No World War III. No.
What I found great about that story was... If you were going to do that, if you were a scientist and you wanted to help humanity, that is just what you would do. You do want people to be healthier. You want them to be smarter. Why not? Let's be stronger.
In theory, all of this is good on paper, I guess, at the very least.
And so that's what I think made this story so compelling, because it's like, why wouldn't I? You understand where they're coming from. It wasn't, you know, and she looks like Bones' ex-love, and it's a salt monster. Now, instead, it was something realistic, sort of.
Well,
believable.
We're gonna finger quotes that realistic.
Realistic.
But I get what you're saying, yeah.
And it had more to it, because then they take one of the crew, one of the hot women that I'm sure Kirk went after, but instead she goes for Khan, and they leave to the Botany Bay.
Botany Bay. Bay.
The Botany Bay. And so the story of Wrath of Khan,
which Chekhov's pronunciation of is, it's almost as classic as Shatner screaming Khan, like
Botany Bay.
Botany Bay.
And by the way, a little note: Chekhov was not in the episode Spacey.
Even though he definitely says that he remembers him, but
yeah, well,
okay. To be fair, Chekhov is introduced in the third season.
Mm.
It doesn't explicitly state that he is a new recruit or he is a new transfer. So he could have been there. And I'm sure whenever like he takes over the Enterprise, he would remember that. But Pavel Chekhov was not a supporting character on Star Trek at the point that Space Seed was filmed.
Yeah.
So technically, this is true.
But we're willing to overlook it because we like the way he says Botany Bay.
Botany Bay.
So the story is you've got this dumpster fire of the first movie, and then they take something that people recognize. They add in a villain that people recognize. They've got a lot of great 80s hair, a lot of hairless chests. Lots happening for the men. A lot is happening. And actually, the women kind of look like solid gold dancers. You know,
I think you're not wrong.
Yeah. So that's going on. And you have what's most important to the stories, and it's the interplay of the characters. And it's the friendship between Kirk and Spock.
It's kind of the antithesis, like just the central like thrust of like the entire thing. Like, spoiler, like in this film is 2 years younger than me. So I'm going to go ahead and say, if you haven't seen Wrath of Khan yet, if you've seen the title of any of the Star Trek movies, Spock dies at the end of this film. And like it, even with the knowledge that Spock does not remain dead, this scene between Shatner and Nimoy, oh my, like it still hits.
Every time.
Like Leonard Nimoy, I don't think ever got the respect that he probably deserved as an actor.
I agree.
He really just nails it. And Shatner, who is not someone that is known for subtlety.
No.
Matter of fact, if there was hyperbole, if you had a picture in the dictionary, William Shatner is probably right there beside it. Kind of deftly plays this scene quietly, almost like lets Nimoy kind of quiet, like there's just a quiet intensity to the entire thing. And Shatner is not, and like, I know I'm picking on him, but
I love him and you do too. And you guys have breathed the same air.
We have been in the same room. It's a very large room.
It's almost like you're in his family.
I like to pretend that he's my surrogate father.
See?
But he doesn't know that.
No, but still. Actually, in reading the books that he wrote just about his life, not the mystery books, the tech war stuff,
right.
But my husband read them first, and then he'd pass them on to me, and I'd read them, and he'd go, "You're going to find something familiar in these books." He's like, "Oh, he's just like me. Huh, how about that?
Look at that?
No wonder I like him so much. We think exactly the same way." And it's just so good. You're listening to Parental Guidance Suggested, brought to you by Hinson Oakley Family Dentistry, Jane Ellen and Adam Cravens. This time talking about not what's in the theater, but what you should be seeing. And we're discussing one of our favorite movies, always in our top 10, Star Trek Part 2. Trek 2.
Nope, that's Hot Shots.
Wrath of Khan, which is...
I mean, and honestly, most of your best Star Trek films even echo a lot of... Like when... Mm-hmm. When The Next Generation got its sequel to what was Generations was a lackluster film.
Mm-hmm.
Like to have the destruction of the Enterprise D, to have like Captain Picard and Captain Kirk meeting, to have like the maiden voyage of the Enterprise B, like all of this sounds really good, but I'll tell you, that film is just not exciting.
No, like, it's just like an extended episode.
If you take William Shatner out of that, it's not even that great of like a two-part episode.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing significant about it is the fact that Kirk is in it. If you put any other captain into it, like the story, you're just kind of like, oh, okay, right. But when they get their sequel, and I'm sure somebody just sat down and went, hey, you know what Star Trek movie did work? Wrath of Khan. They're like, what's our best? Like, they basically just take the formula and extrapolate it for the next generation. And they even take a page from the later Star Treks in that they got the first officer to direct it, and they get Jonathan. Like, basically, First Contact is just TNG's version of this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you have two personal, like, Data and Picard.
I'd
like,
have to say that's the best of all the Next Generation movies, wouldn't you say?
First Contact? Yeah. Undoubtedly. Yeah. It's not Insurrection. It's definitely not Generations. It's not. And it's not Nemesis. Like, and I'm out. Like, that's all. I'm just saying, First Contact is easily the best of the Next Generation films. Mm-hmm.
And Wrath of Khan is important on so many levels. It not only made the Star Trek fans happy, it's still worth watching today, and it makes non-Star Trek fans shut their gobs because it holds up as a solid movie. Whether you know anything about Star Trek or like science fiction, the story is good.
Well, and it almost plays like a naval like war film. Mm-hmm. Like it like it's two battling submarines.
This could be a submarine. You're right.
If you take out all of the science fiction and the space and like the augments and all that. Like, but it could be like a follow-up to Hunt for Red October. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, the film itself works. If you've never watched episode one, if you haven't even seen Space Seed, which I hadn't at the point that I watched Wrath of Khan, like, you don't, they tell
you
didn't have everything, and they don't do it in, like, a really, like, narrative way or, like, just an info dump. Like, it's pretty natural the way they kind of explain to you, like, this is what happened in that episode. And here. Like, you don't. It really doesn't take away from the film if you have not seen that. Like, if you drop in and try to watch, like, Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, you're probably just going to be like, wait a minute, why are they at this mountain, and why is that man trying to steal his jewelry?
There's like, a lot of walking
what
here.
What is going on? But, like, Wrath of Khan, as much as it's a follow-up to, like, the motion picture, as much as it's a follow-up to the television series, a specific episode of it, you don't have to have seen any of that. And the characters are so well-defined, you don't have to, you know who James Kirk is or any of that to, like I said, really enjoy the film.
There's a part of me that wants to say that, I want to make sure I have my years correct, using this tiny computer. It was the best.
Well, and Nicholas Meyer, the guy that directed and wrote Star Trek II, if you will also notice the best of the original series Star Trek movies he is involved in. He writes and directs. Well, I don't think he was the sole writer, but he directs Voyage Home, Undiscovered Country. He has nothing to do with Star Trek V, which is a dumpster fire. Star Trek IV, he was also involved in writing that. Like, all of the best that the original series had to offer, he is the guy kind of, I guess, that's focusing it, however you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's not even somebody that going into it was just like, I love Star Trek. Like, he was just a director and a writer, and he's like, yeah, okay, I can do this. And he looks at, and essentially, that's what he said. He's like, this plays a lot like Horatio Hornblower in space. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what this needs to be, which was Gene Roddenberry's kind of, that's what inspired
his blueprint
to do it. Like, so the fact that he looks at it and sees that without, and I'm reasonably certain he and Roddenberry didn't have that conversation. He just saw it and he's like, this is what that is. Mm-hmm. It probably also is one of the things that makes that work so well.
And I had to double check my dates, and actually it's not how I played out in my head. Star Wars, the second Star Wars film, the one that counts, that is 2 years before Wrath of Khan, but they are similar in how they end. They're similar where a character you love is now taken out of the picture, but you know they're going to be back in the picture, but you don't know how.
Well, at the point that both of those films, and if you don't, Empire Strikes Back is what she's referring to, Han Solo is kind of dead.
Yeah.
At the end of that film, and Leonard Nimoy or Spock, like, I mean, they give him, you know, the burial. Well, it's not a burial. They fire him into the.
But he goes to the Genesis planet.
But I'm saying, like, both of those actors had kind of indicated that they may be done with those characters. So, in a way, and like I said, we have the
emotionally,
we have
struck a chord,
and we have the ability of hindsight to go back and just go, well, they weren't done.
Yeah.
But at that point, like, there was a very uncertain future for two characters. Like, however much, like, the captains get most of the attention in Star Trek, I would argue that Spock is probably the most well-known Star Trek.
Oh, you have to be.
I mean, am I out of line?
No, I think it has to be Spock.
So, and as much as Han Solo...
He wrote that children's book.
He also wrote a book that said, I am Spock. Also wrote another book that said, I am not Spock. Mm. So he seems confused about that.
He's a doctor.
Yeah, well,
my parents had the Dr. Spock book in the house. I thought that was awesome.
I don't think that's the same Spock.
I found that out when I pulled it off the shelf. I was like, what, Spock?
Mr. Spock, why does he know about child rearing? This is strange.
This is not what I thought it would be.
But Harrison Ford, as much as he is not a Jedi, I would also argue that Han Solo is probably the best known Star Wars character. I mean, and I'm not saying any disrespect to Vader or Luke.
Right, but you can make a lot of similarities between the like, what those characters serve in the stories.
Yeah, like you could have asked my grandma knew who Han Solo was. And like she doesn't know anything about Jedis or midichlorians or like light speed. But she can be like, oh yeah, that's
no
Harrison.
Time for that mumbo jumbo.
That's Harrison Ford. I know him.
And he is fine.
I'm not comfortable.
She
I'm not comfortable thinking that, but it's a possibility.
That's how she knew who he was.
We're gonna move on to the next part of this.
Because really, how old was she in the 80s?
See, I mean, she would probably have been in her, I think, late 40s, 50s.
Yeah,
like yeah.
She thought he was fine.
No.
So that's why she knew
wrong.
Who he was.
She's not wrong. I'm attracted to Han Solo. I'm not afraid to say it.
She might have thought all sorts of things
about him. Star Trek II Wrath of Khan.
That's
you
what
were saying.
Talking about.
You were saying.
Anyway, what this film did was it made a blueprint for all, not just for science fiction films, but it reminded people what's important in a movie. And what often gets lost in sci-fi fantasy. Sci-fi fantasy can be so fun with things blowing up. And we're going to beam over here. But if there's no story, it's still a suck fest.
Well, I mean, it ends up being hollow. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't. Like, we're talking about this film, and it is almost 40 years removed from its original release at this point. If you want to be able to go beyond your like video release date, like you're going to have to speak to like themes. I mean, or you're just going to have to make something exceptional. And what they did instead of spending all that money on those stupid special effects from the first one, like really the thing that should have been upfront and what is upfront in most of the original series episodes is the interplay with the characters.
And it's still quotable. To this day, I say, he tasks me.
Oh.
Because it's awesome.
Speaking of pronunciations that are memorable, everything that Khan says in that movie is just fantastic.
Yes. Much like Star Trek VI, everything the captain from The Sound of Music says.
I'm not going to say that Christopher Plummer's Chang is a better villain than Khan. But wow.
Yeah.
Chris Plummer, when he is screaming Shakespeare in a Klingon bird of prey while he is fighting the Enterprise, like it's operatic.
It's
like
beautiful.
It's just cry havoc and let slip the dogs. I'm like, you can't help but get excited. And if for some reason you can't get your hands on a copy of Star Trek II, but you do have a Star Trek VI readily available, they're infinitely watchable.
Oh, absolutely.
And Christopher Plummer, while not Khan, and that's no disrespect for him, his General Chang is incredible. And probably in as much as Star Trek VI is the second best Star Trek movie,
mm-hmm.
he's probably the second best Star Trek villain.
Yeah,
right? I say that with all respect to the Borg Queen whatever was happening in Star Trek V pollution in Star Trek IV. Or
now, Star Trek IV has a place in my heart.
But it doesn't have a memorable villain.
Pollution.
What is it? I mean, it's pollution or the 1980s is really the villain of that movie.
But Star Trek IV was the trouble with Tribbles in delight in movie form. It was just a delight.
There's another film that you don't have to be a Star Trek fan, or you don't really even have to have seen the previous Star Trek movie to understand. Like, basically, they're just like, oh yeah, the future bad, and we have to bring whales to the future.
Okay,
that's all you need to know for that movie. It's not as dramatic. It's definitely quotable, but the film's hysterical.
Yeah, it's. Oh, and I remember seeing it on Christmas night with my friend Chris Bonner and the rest of my family. Well, not my parents. They weren't interested, but my sisters. We all went to see Star Trek IV.
And the Voyage Home.
And it was awesome. But we're talking about Wrath of Khan. And there's another part of it that was also genius. It was bringing in another character from another, maybe one or two Star Treks, and that was a long-lost love of Captain Kirk's. Now, mind you, how many were there? And I gotta put it out there. He only had one kid he didn't know about? I think not.
I'm gonna put this out there. They only have one that they put in canon that Kirk didn't know about.
Right.
But I'm going to go ahead and say, like, on his five-year mission,
yeah,
there's
a lot.
There's no problem believing that the Kirk bloodline is not living on.
Now, again, the actor has passed, and I don't want to say bad things about him, but I was always bugged by who they chose to be Kirk's son because he was in the TV show Square Pegs, and that's all I could see every time. That's all I could hear every time he opened his mouth. And he just didn't strike me as being believable as Captain Kirk's son. You know what I mean?
I did not see the through line like either. I don't know who I would have cast in that role, but he definitely did not speak I did not see the DNA of Captain Kirk or William Shatner.
Right.
Like,
and I'm not saying
now,
that he
Carol
did it wrong.
Marcus.
Yeah.
Carol Marcus in that film. Like I understand, like she is charismatic, she's interesting. Mm-hmm. I can draw a line to be like, okay, that's why Kirk was drawn to this character. I understand that. But like
kid was just
I'm just like, wow, you're
kind of annoying.
You're white toast. You are vanilla not dipped in chocolate.
And you with parents like that who were both committed to things, he's just kind of
there.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Dude, and he was
I mean, I'm not dumping on this movie.
No, we love this movie.
But
if there's one thing that will kind of stick out at me, it's like, yeah, that just never sat right. And it doesn't mean it's wrong. It just kind of is like, it would have been one of those situations where you go in for an audition and you didn't get it just because you didn't look right. Just because, I don't see Kirk here.
Now, to be fair, William Shatner is very unique.
Yes.
And like even when Chris Pine played Captain Kirk in the J.J. Abrams, he's doing his own version of like bravado and cockiness and charisma. Because like I'm going to go ahead and say like trying to emulate William Shatner without looking stupid.
Or just making a joke.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Shatner is really the only one that is able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like do it well and doing it convincing. And like I said, I do. A lot of people will give junk to the J.J. Abrams Star Trek
movies.
I don't
know why. I love them.
I rather enjoy them as well. And I specifically love Chris Pine. And that.
Yeah.
And this was a role that when they announced it, I was just like, leave it alone. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But Chris Pine is, he's handsome, charismatic, like he's interesting.
And handsome.
Oh, I mean, yes.
But I enjoy the J.J. Abrams very much, and I enjoy the lens flare a lot. As a matter of fact, if I don't see lens flare, it's like, oh, man, J.J. left it out.
That's how you know he didn't direct the third one. You're just where are all the lens flares?
I mean, it's just like, you know, it smells of home cooking. You know? Oh, lens
really
flare, J.J.'s.
Oh, J.J.'s here.
I know, and it's like a running joke with me and my spouse. It's like, oh, J.J. Abrams direct this?
Well, I mean, like, it's...
It's not really funny, but it amuses us, and I enjoy them.
Some, you know, Spielberg likes to have things that, you know, chase around humans, or he likes, you know, childlike wonder. J.J. Abrams likes lens flares.
Yeah, it happens. Now, with the J.J. Abrams reboot, which I am still waiting for another one, guys. But I guess no one's making a movie right now. I digress.
No, really, no one is.
Yeah, no one is. I'm still holding Timothy Oliphant to his declaration that he'll just keep doing that TV show on his own at his house. Now's the time.
It really is. Like, seriously, Tim. Speaking of somebody else that probably could have played the captain.
Yeah, he could have done. Yeah, yeah.
The captain. Well, I'm not even saying Kirk.
Or he could have been Kirk's son.
I would have cast Timothy Oliphant if I could somehow. Well, I'll just use the Klingon bird of prey they use in Voyage Home mm-hmm. to take him.
That's right. Back in Jensen time. Ackles, if he'd been the right age for that.
Yeah, I'll just slingshot him around the sun. That's mm-hmm. all you have
I
to
totally
do.
Totally see that.
I don't know why they didn't go back and correct more things.
I don't know.
I mean, if at the point that you have the calculation for time travel,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand. There's lots of reasons why you shouldn't, but I'm just saying, like. As much as Kirk liked to violate the Prime Directive...
He did that a lot.
And I believe they even mention it in the court scenes. And who disobeyed the Prime Directive? Whatever suited him! I'm just going ahead and saying...
Yeah,
like,
we would have done the same thing.
At the point that that guy has the ability to time travel, do you not think there's some stuff that happened between like 4 and 6 and maybe after 6 before generations that he's like, hey, Bones... Spock, you know what we should do? Or did he, but like Spock's like, we're not going to do that.
And this is probably the only chance I'll get to ever mention this episode, but I also wanted to see them bring back the character that Terry Garr played, which was actually a black cat. And she was hanging around with that future guy whose name I forgot, but Terry Garr was a cat. Remember that? And that was supposed to be a spinoff of some sort of spacey thing.
Gary Seven,
yes.
Yeah.
I loved that episode. It's like, when are they going to do Gary Seven? And Gary Seven never took off. Bring Gary Seven us.
I think it's like Operation Earth.
Yes.
Or something like that is the episode.
I freaking loved that.
There was a comic book series that continued it. And I
really?
Did read that. Yeah. Gary Seven is honest to goodness, if you will watch that episode, and I understand that we have diverged from Star Trek 2.
But it's kind of a standalone.
If you have ever listened to this podcast, it was going to happen. Gary, it would have made a really interesting television show, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of sad that we never got like even half a season or like a mid-season replacement of it or anything. Like,
and
really.
I think that would be a great character to bring into the next Star Wars. Star Trek.
Well, JJ's involved in both.
I know. I almost said wars, but you see, I go evenly between the two.
Listen, if they dump on Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker, like I like JJ's Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
I like his Star Trek movies. I really like JJ Abrams movies. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like his TV shows. Like the guy is just he is a talented. Like producer of entertainment.
Yeah.
And to tie it back into what we started talking about, when he does a sequel to Star Trek 2009, guess what character he decides needs to be revisited?
Yes, and that's where I was headed and then forgot. Who else could be a great Khan but Sherlock Holmes?
Good old Benedict. Apparently, you have to have an unusual name in order to play a Khan.
And it was just, I enjoyed it. And when I first heard about it, I went, Wrath of the Khan is the most perfect movie. You know, that's going on in my head. Or you and I probably had that conversation. That's more likely.
I still don't think, like, Into Darkness is not superior to Wrath of Khan.
No.
But, like, I will take Benedict Cumberbatch's interpretation anything. Of whatever any day. If he decides he needs to tackle Saved by the Bell's Screech, I'm in.
By the way, almost Stephen Colbert.
He was?
He auditioned for that, and he obviously did not get it.
Man, that really changes that dynamic. Man.
And
this is from somebody that's seen every episode of Saved by the Bell.
Stephen Colbert auditioned for it.
now, every time I watch Saved by the Bell, which is probably more than a 39-year-old man should, I'm going to just sit there and be like, what would this scene have been like?
Surreal. So, in conclusion, if you haven't seen Star Trek II Wrath of Khan, you're missing out on a fine, fine film.
If for some reason you can only pick a single one of the 13 Star Trek movies in existence, and they're not all gems, kids.
No.
I'm going to let you know that right now. Star Trek II is the one that you must watch. And if you don't like that, if it does not engage you in some way, there's not a lot that the others are going to offer you.
Right.
Like, if this doesn't hook you, I'm just saying, like, this really is, like, as far as, like, any of the auxiliary media, like any of the other films, any of the TV shows, any of all of Star Trek.
Yes, this is the shining star atop all of Star Trek.
If this does not engage you, you need to just hit skip. Like, this is as good as it gets. And if you don't think it's good, like, Star Trek VI isn't going to win you over. No. First Contact isn't going to win you over. Like,
Nemesis sure
any isn't. Episode of Voyager is not going to win you over. Maybe the Enterprise theme song.
Been a long time.
Like, that's going to win you over. Because how can't it?
So funny.
But like, that has nothing to do with Star Trek II. Wrath of Khan really is just, it's the best that Star Trek has to offer.
Yes.
It is Star Trek firing on all cylinders, both warp nacelles, if you will.
It is Star Trek with all of its dilithium crystals.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, so you really need to see it. And if you don't, we won't be talking to you for a great deal of time.
At hell's heart, I stab at thee.
Exactly.
If you don't.
That's all we got to say.
And if you haven't seen the film, you don't get that reference. Or if you haven't read Moby Dick.
But you've probably
stopped listening at that point.
Yeah, I think probably.
Yeah, they're just much. Like, I don't know what they're talking about.
What a shame. You know, they don't usually quote Klingon opera or things like that in Star Trek's.
No, but they...
Could you imagine if that's what Khan had said? Just something in Klingon?
It would be very threatening.
It would be.
And definitely, like, over the top.
Yeah, for sure. So, Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, obviously our favorite Star Trek of all the Star Treks. And yes, we could continue to talk about it, but we're not going to, and it's not going to be easy.
I mean, we'll continue talking about it and not recording it.
Yeah, but we will continue to talk about it.
Yeah, there's like a 37-hour podcast.
Yes.
Just us over the entirety of like the time we've known each other. Just being like, so...
Did you understand?
Khan.
Now, have you shown it to your children?
I actually started I've been watching Picard.
Mm-hmm.
And like the kids will wander into the room and just be like, what's up? And but like my gamer tag on the Xbox is Captain Riker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because like they heard somebody refer to it and they go, wait. They go, his name is Captain Riker too. And I
really?
Go,
really? He must have stolen it.
And I go, that's where I got the name. And they're like, oh, like,
yeah.
It was funny to watch them connect all this stuff that has been around them. And they're like, that's where that comes from. But they had seen that. And like, they're, if you haven't watched Picard, like the Borg end up showing up in their Romulans. I thoroughly enjoyed the thing. But the kids started getting interested with that, and they're like, do the Borg show up anywhere else? And I'm just like,
and you see, you may be surprised, because I have two children, and Adam has 85, and you'd think they would already know all of the Star Treks, but I was afraid that I was so excited about Star Trek and wanting my kids to love it that they would become kids and go, you're not going to like that.
Yeah, mom and dad like it. It's not cool.
So I've just kind of eased them into it. They totally embraced the J.J. Abrams because Chris Pine.
Yeah.
There's that. But they like those. And I know I've shown them Wrath of Khan, and I know there was tearage. How could there not be? Honestly, I usually can't get through it anyway. The movie's so good. So they have seen that one. They have not seen six. I certainly haven't shown them the first one.
I don't even watch the first. No. Like I watched it when I bought the VHS box set, and I like it was just. It really is a chore to get through. And
yeah.
This is from somebody that like loves Star Trek. Like,
so I think they need to see it several more times. And this quarantine, I believe, is a fine opportunity.
I mean, that's at a minimum, you're looking at like, 26 hours for just the films.
Yeah.
And by the way, if they need it and they don't have access to like CBS All Access, I do have the DVDs of literally everything and some
and
of the Blu-ray.
Captain Picard, Jean-Luc, no, his actual name,
Patrick Stewart.
Because of him, you can get CBS All Access for free if you sign up by the 23rd.
And I'm saying, like,
it's only like free for a month.
And it's not like any of y'all are doing anything.
Nope.
So, like, go ahead and just binge Discovery season 1 and 2 and Picard. You'll be caught up for whenever they can finally film Discovery season 3. And they're talking about the Section 31 series.
Oh,
they're talking about a Pike series.
Yeah.
And now they're talking about a Captain Riker series.
Ooh.
Like, apparently there was very positive reaction to him in his appearance in Picard.
I love.
And like, they were just, somebody was putting up there, they're like, well, should they do a Captain Pike or a Captain Riker? And I'm just like, why can't you do both? Kids.
I love how they had Pike's number one, like in the original series, like just this classic
'60s
hotness with the hair and everything. Oh, love.
Well, it's like Anson Mount, like, and again, this is from somebody that just adores Star Trek. Probably one of my favorite captains. And like, I'm just saying, like, in the short amount of time, because he's not even the captain for like both seasons. He starts in the second season. Like, for the limited amount of screen time that this guy has, like, really made a tremendous impact on a character that has already been played and popularized in the films, like in the classic episode, like the Menagerie. Like, not a character that like he was the first to it, but he definitely put his stamp on that thing in a very, like, spectacular way.
Yeah. Love it. But what we're trying to say is, watch Star Trek II, get back to us. We'll be happy to discuss it with you for several more hours. Thank you for listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
You've been listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. Download your favorites and keep up with new episodes in the Hints and Oakley Podcast Center.